Hi, readers. Welcome to Books Connect Us from Penguin Random House. This is a podcast about staying connected with each other and the stories and authors who inspire us. On today's show, we have a conversation between Matthew Riemer and Leighton Brown, authors of We Are Everywhere, Protest, Power, and Pride in the History of Queer Liberation. This book is a rich and sweeping photographic history of the queer liberation movement from the creators and curators of the massively popular Instagram account at LGBT History, and traces queer activism from its roots in late 19th century Europe, long before the pivotal Stonewall riots of 1969, to the gender warriors leading the charge today. The New York Times calls We Are Everywhere an impassioned photographic tour of an ever-changing, increasingly vocal, and insistently resilient LGBTQ community and culture, from 19th century ideology to contemporary conversations around intersectionality. And now, here are authors Matthew Riemer and Leighton Brown.
Hi, this is Matthew Riemer.
And this is Leighton Brown.
We are homosexual life partners and co-authors of We Are Everywhere, Protest, Power, and Pride in the History of Queer Liberation. Just here to talk a little bit about Protest, Power, and Pride. After the first gay pride marches in June 1970, activist Kiyoshi Kurumaya described the experience he'd had with thousands of other queer people marching from Greenwich Village to Central Park. "We came battle-scarred and angry to topple your racist, sexist, hateful society," he wrote. "In one fell swoop, we came to destroy by our mere presence your labels and stereotypes with which you've oppressed us for centuries. And we came with love and open hearts to challenge your hate and secrecy." So now that we've reached June 2020, we know that many queer people and our allies of good conscience are questioning how or if we're supposed to commemorate Pride, these annual events that are so often marketed as completely feel-good affairs, so much so that one can hesitate right now to even recognize them given the pandemic and unchecked racism, police riots, and this rising tide of totalitarianism. What our work is about, what we want to emphasize, are these struggles are what make Pride 2020 so important, even if the rainbows and the floats and everything never step off. Pride is a commemoration of a struggle against police brutality, and it's much more than that. It's a declaration of queer people's never-ending commitment to fighting oppression everywhere. So because we remain battle-scarred and angry and more committed than ever to toppling racist, sexist, hateful society, Pride itself isn't canceled. It can't be canceled. And you know, we have to reclaim Pride and return it to its radical roots. Because it's undeniable that the queer community is made up of individuals that come from every age, race, tribe, gender, ethnicity, sexual orientation, ability, education, religion, class, background, location. If we really, truly want queer people to be free, then we have to fight for everyone to be free.
What we've always tried to do, first with our Instagram account, LGBT History, and then even more so with our book, We Are Everywhere, is to explore, analyze, and emphasize the overwhelming importance of militant, unapologetic radicals and their confrontational brands of activism throughout the ongoing struggle for queer liberation. More often than not, the bravest, the most impactful activists, those who created the space for the types of incremental change so many of us now take for granted, were those unable or unwilling to hide themselves and their truths. Gender warriors, queers of color, trans folks, women, queers with disabilities, under-respected, under-housed, and the list goes on. It was their visibility and their fight that pushed the boundaries. Queer history and queer liberation therefore can't be told in a vacuum. So many of our heroes, past, present, and future, lived and continue to live at the intersections of multiple oppressions. Thus, if you want to celebrate Marsha P. Johnson, for example, because of her impact on what some call gay rights, then you necessarily have to support trans liberation, Black Lives Matter, the decriminalization of sex work, expanded access to mental health resources, greater housing opportunities, and the defunding of police. Otherwise, you're just using history for your own comfort, which is what oppressors do.
Right, right. And I think that that's what, with, so this all started with, at LGBT history, it's been expanded upon in the book, and really what the focus and the thesis of We Are Everywhere is that the radicals and the militants create this space that too often is then occupied by moderates who make compromises with the oppressor. And part of what happens is that moderate bent becomes not only the way that our politics goes, but it's also the way that history is told. And that by diminishing the radical voices in the telling of history, we diminish the possibility of radical voices now and their importance and their value.
And I think it's important that we went into our sort of search for history of our community out of a curiosity. We weren't looking to uncover what we are talking about now. We wanted to know the facts, and we continue to want to know more and more. But what those facts taught us along the way is exactly that. It wasn't the sort of mainstream history that is, to the extent any queer history is told, that people hear about as much as those who were more on the sort of fringes of society pushing the envelope, pushing those who were more moderate, more quote-unquote acceptable to society at large. And so it's striking to us that the facts have just led us to that. We did not search for those specific facts.
Right, and it's really about the messaging and the way that history is told that and what we've always tried to do, and certainly with the book, is that if you look at history, if you want your, I mean, it's what you said about Marcia. The further away we get from her death, which was in 92, the more and more we see her. And for those unfamiliar, Marsha P. Johnson was a trans woman, a black trans woman, who certainly was involved with the collective events known as Stonewall. Her leading role is in question. Even, I mean, by herself, she has said on record she was not there at the very beginning. She was a constant presence in Greenwich Village for decades. She was a kind of the soul, the positive energy of queer liberation. She was underhoused. She lived with another activist for the last years of her life. She is a saint. She was treated like garbage by the mainstream movement, by and large, while she was alive. She was murdered, though it's an open case. But the further we get away from her death, the more she's embraced as this saint, this icon. And it's really easy when people are dead to do that. But in order to really fight for liberation, in order to really build a liberated future, we have to reckon fully with our past. And it does not diminish Marsha P. Johnson to say that she was a sex worker, or to say that she battled mental illness, or to say that she was homeless or underhoused. In fact, it elevates her, and it makes her a complete person to know that her struggle was multifaceted. And
it also does not in any way take away from what Marsha did to not say she threw the first brick at Stonewall. The myth that's gone up around Stonewall has just created this undue importance on that singular event when people like Marcia spent the next 20 years, some more, fighting day in, day out for the queer liberation struggle.
Right, and I think that's what another big part of the book, and to get to the images, and so the We Are Everywhere is, I guess, kind of the what we always said, the book we needed. It is part photography, but I hate this description, but I'll use it anyway. It's a photography book, and it's also a dense history narrative. But those two things shouldn't be separate. They're not separate. It's one book, because we don't see photography as separate. It for a people whose fight has been about visibility, photography are primary sources, and being confronted by, you know, to see these people, to see Marsha P. Johnson, to see the radicals, to see their kind of bigger than life presence, is really important, as opposed to just kind of reading the words that have been filtered down through academia. And we're, you know, Leighton and I are both attorneys by training. We take a very fact-based approach. And while that might sound obvious, it's not, unfortunately. Now, with a lot, like, we build on incredible work by incredible academics and incredible public historians. But the popular narrative of gay, and I use gay specifically as opposed to queer, history is very much love is love, very much fighting toward equality, when those who actually created this movement, equality was, you know, that was the least of what, equal to who? Is that really the best we could do? We wanted liberation, and a big part of that, and we talk about this in the book, and certainly Stonewall has to do with this, but it started before Stonewall, it continued after Stonewall, was about police brutality, which both for queer people in queer spaces, and then of course for people of color, and then those many, many queer people of color, is a constant struggle. Activists have for decades been yelling within the queer liberation movements to focus more and more on police brutality, only to be ignored. Right now, in the midst of kind of a glorious reckoning with the undeniable hideousness of racism and police brutality in this country, it couldn't be clearer that if our community had focused more and listened more to the radical voices about police brutality, from Stonewall to Blues Bar and onward, we might not be as troubled as we are. But it's not too late. There are still radical voices, but it's time that we start telling our history in such a way to center the radical voices of the present. So, Black Lives Matter would be one of the most important things to take away. Because I mean, we were talking about this. We've been talking about this. That, you know, we're also LGBT underscore history on Instagram, and we have this presence and brand, and given this amazing activism that's evolving after the hideousness, right? I mean, the vile, the evil, Ahmaud Arbery and George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, and so many others, so many others, and Tony McDade, that there's among a lot of queer people, particularly white queer people, that we need to not focus on pride this June. We need to focus on fighting oppression. We need to focus on Black lives. It is, you know, as historians and activists, we are struck that there's such a disconnect from queer history that somehow they don't understand that that's what pride is. Pride is a battle against oppression. Pride is about Black Lives Matter. and that until all of us are free, none of us are free, and that every year there is this debate about is it a party or is it a protest? And every year those shouting about it being a protest are laughed off and called crazy. And, you know, I'm not one to say, oh, there's silver lining, but maybe they'll start to listen.
Right. Pride and the current protests going on, and just mass numbers, and it's so wonderful to see. They're not mutually exclusive, and in fact, overlap a lot. And for people like us, white cis guys, who really have always had it pretty easy with a cop, it's a time that, because it is also a month when the world pays more attention to our community, we should seize that attention and redirect it and really focus on the overlaps within our own community. You can celebrate pride, your community's pride, your own pride, without just focusing on rainbows and the party and the parade.
And yourself.
Right, exactly. I want to redirect. I want my pride to go out and to help others.
Right.
Not, I mean, especially, I do always think of young queers, too. I'm old enough, and with that comes a certain stubbornness or confidence or something, that I can deal with the world better. And as I said, it's not necessarily a tough world for a white gay guy in a East Coast city, but we can't leave anybody who doesn't have those same privileges and benefits behind.
Right. And yeah, I think that what we have realized over the past 5 years or so, since kind of discovering and starting to live with history, we are more complete human beings, certainly more confident and complete queer people than we otherwise would have been. And that the connection between confidence, representation, and the ability to be in the struggle, however you can, it's not just on the street, however you can. But Audre Lorde said everything we do has to contribute to the struggle, because everything they do is grinding us to dust, and we will not be ground. That if we can, it's not, you can't walk around without history. We all have to have some basis in history, and there's so little information, and there's these lies that we don't have enough facts. There's lies that we don't have photos, that we don't have primary sources. That is the oppressor, both within and from outside our community, saying that, no, don't look. I'm going to tell you what you want, what you should know. Don't buy that. And what we have been struck by is what we just didn't know. And as soon as we started asking, what don't we know, the other question is, why don't we know it? And what we've tried to do with the book is just show an inkling. I mean, just show a little bit, and it opens up a whole new world from the late 18th century. And there's really this line. That's one of the most, I think, powerful things about the book is that I hesitate to say a straight line, because but a pretty direct line from activist to activist, issue to issue, that these same people keep popping up, these same things keep popping up, and it's a torch that gets passed down.
And while there is so much out there, I think it's important to remember at the same time that, I mean, compared to the more mainstream history, whether you're talking about the history of the United States, whatever, it has been so analyzed again and again by so many people that, I mean, queer history is still being discovered and learned. Now, I mean, there's been amazing work for decades and more now in that respect, but we haven't had the same sort of army of historians and everybody else working on it. And so I think everybody should always be a little suspect when they hear the first, the most, crediting entire events or movements or anything else to a single person or organization.
I think that is something that we can that we all can kind of learn right now. If you're in the struggle at all right now, focusing on the events of right now, things move so quickly, and events happen so fast. We live in D.C. and what happened on June 1st at Lafayette Square when our current president decided to do a photo op, and a huge presence of cops and soldiers,
gang,
right, opened fire, not fatal fire, thankfully, into peaceful protesters. I mean, it happened in an instant, and there are so many people that have so many stories to tell. No one person can tell the story of that event. And I can't help but think of Stonewall, like, in that. I mean, it was an absolute riot, a cop riot. It was absolute chaos. And as we watch all this stuff unfold, this should give some sense of how you should approach history. Anytime anybody tells you the definitive history, close the book. It's not the definitive history. And like Layton said, yes, there's incredible work, and we can't touch some of that work, and we don't want to make it sound like, I mean, some of the work, we're not blazing trails. But a lot of the most popular work out there, and that continues to be published, is told from a very respectable point of view that still aims towards showing gays, lesbians, bisexuals, transgender people as just like everybody else. And when you tell your history that way, you're going to find examples in history to show that. So you're not looking for the people who simply didn't want to or couldn't have possibly been just like everybody else. And you don't teach younger queer people that we're not like everybody else. And that might be the best thing about us. And, well, I don't think it's might. That is the best thing about us. And Frank Kameny, Larry Kramer, who just passed, Marsha P. Johnson, Sylvia Rivera, Audre Lorde, the list goes on. I mean, these are all people that figure prominently in the book. Don't let those names be used to further goals of fitting in. They believed that we are right, and there are moral obligations, and those obligations all build up to oppression anywhere is a threat to oppression everywhere, we have an obligation to continuously learn. And with that, as Layton said, we are cis white guys. You should read those who have influenced us the most, certainly Audre Lorde, Pat Parker, Essex Hemphill,
James Baldwin,
Joseph Beam, Charlene Carruthers, Saeed Jones, there's more. I just went looking up at our bookshelf.
I think the mention of that we are different, and that's what gives us power and makes the community so wonderful. But it's, I guess, a few things. One, that is also what can make it tough, especially younger in life, to embrace yourself and to feel that pride. And yes, I use capital pride there as well. I think it all stems from that. it also gives us the power. Now, while Matthew and I just can't fully or perhaps even begin to comprehend what the Black community has to deal with from, you know, far too young an age through their entire lives when they're dealing with the police, with employers, I mean, the list goes on and on. It allows us to have some amount of greater understanding and connection, and we need to pursue that and use the privileges that we then have in order to fight for the less represented in our community and outside of our community.
Right. Well, I think that it's that we can't, you don't get to just have trippingly off your tongue say the LGBT community or the queer community unless you're doing the work. If you are a gay man of privilege, you don't get to have that community that includes the most marginalized people. You don't get to put that cloak on unless you are actively working to understand. You're never going to understand, but actively working to not speak on their behalf, but to listen and amplify and create space for the more marginalized. Those who have created space for you, and you're now living in their space, we have to continue to create more space. And part of that, and I think what's going on right now, and what I think hope that We Are Everywhere shows, is that that includes screwing up. That includes a lot of infighting. There's been a lot of infighting within the queer community, and there always will be. And that's really important because we're not all the same. And people misspeak. People make mistakes, and they get told that you made mistakes. And instead of taking your ball and going home, listen to the people that you've tried to speak on behalf of. Take your lumps. Learn. Have your consciousness be raised. And then fight harder. Because right now, June 2020, the only option we have is to win. The other is destruction. And you know, we are very proud of our book and our work. It is built on the shoulders and of countless people. And if whether it's in the dedication page or in the acknowledgments, and certainly in the end notes, there is so much to read. There's so much incredible work out there, in particular by Black queer people and queer people of color generally. Our book, our work should, if anything, be the very beginning, because, you know, this is a ceaseless fight, and that's what Pride is all about. It is a state of being, not a celebration.
Right. Our work for a number of years now, before the book was even a thought, really, it has transformed us. It has just absolutely empowered us. I knew at a very early age I was gay, but it wasn't until the last few years that I really started feeling part of a community, and I would say had true pride in, while maybe I did in certain aspects of my life, not necessarily in just the simple fact of being gay. And I, the history, and including the imagery, I'm probably the more sort of visual of the two of us, and so it, from early on, the photographs just, they captured me, just like they are capturing me now, seeing everything that's going on across this country, and also capturing the country as a whole, really. It instilled this just greater understanding and confidence and pride, and we hope that the work we do, history generally, the work other people do in the area, does that for, you know, hopefully everyone in the community, as many as possible, young and old, you know, cis, trans, everybody. We're all part of this history and should be proud of what the community's accomplished, while at the same time aware of how much more we have to do, no matter how comfortable you may be in your individual experience at this point.
Yeah. And to all, you know, the queer folks, especially younger queer folks, but to all queer folks, like, and those that are out there on the streets right now, we are so proud of you, and your militant ancestors are so proud of you, and you are part of a long history of radical warriors that have all too slowly, but not by their doing, but by the oppressor's doing, inched us toward something that looks like liberation. Do not give up. Just keep going. And to everybody who is out there, just thank you. Black Lives Matter.
Thank you for listening to Books Connect Us. For more great book recommendations and information about your favorite authors, feel free to follow Penguin Random House on social media or visit penguinrandomhouse.com. And if you've enjoyed what you've heard, go ahead and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, as it helps more listeners to find our show. This podcast is produced by Pat Stango and edited by Clayton Gumbert. I've been Erin Leaf, and until next time, this has been Books Connect Us.